Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Irene Blog Talk Radio Show with your host and creator, Minister Annie Bell, the founder and executive director of Wealth Management Ministries Incorporated. We are providing talk therapy to survivors of child abuse, sex trafficking, and other traumas. Please enjoy the show.
Well, hello, hello, hello again. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, listening in. I know you are busy doing so many things because life has us so busy, but I thank you for taking the time out today to be with us. I am Minister Annie Bell, and you have joined in with Irene Blog Talk Radio Show. I am, of course, the host and the creator of Irene Blog Talk Radio Show, which is an outreach of Wealth Management Ministries Incorporated. We are endeavoring to bring talk therapy to survivors of child abuse, sex trafficking, and other traumas, as well as providing awareness, prevention, and resources to the community. Let me go ahead and put the rating on this show out here tonight. It is MA for mature audiences only. So go ahead and turn on SpongeBob and VeggieTales for the kiddos, and then come back and join us for the show. We have some thought-provoking conversation. The topic of tonight is called Let's Talk About Sex After Sexual Trauma, of course. So to start off, victims of childhood sexual abuse often have associations, flashbacks, and memories related to specific aspects of the sexual abuse. Now, this can be reflected in both psychological and physiological responses. So difficulties can range from psychological appearances or fear of any intimacy associated with sexual activity to the psychological symptomology, such as even vaginismus. Now, that is a painful, spasmodic contraction of the vagina in response to physical contact or pressure, especially during sexual intercourse. There's also orgasmic disorders. Again, as I have shared on my past shows, most of, if not all of, survivors has what is known as CPTSD, which is complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And so a lot of these associations and flashbacks is because of that PTSD. So you're not crazy, you're not, losing your mind. It is definitely a disorder that has happened because of the trauma. Now, on the other hand, there is also a population of survivors whose survival responses are translated into sexual addiction and or even hyperpromiscuity. If you are the small percentage of survivors who suffers no negative effects in this area, consider yourself blessed, because it is definitely something that hits a large population of us survivors. Now, tonight, I have a special relationship educator with More Than Conquerors Incorporated, and she actually teaches in the Atlanta schools. She also enjoys bringing enlightenment to high-risk students through evidence-based teachings, interactive methods, and by thought-provoking and life-changing discussions. She's also volunteers with the Partners Against Domestic Violence, and Sharon J. Brown, who is an advocate against sex trafficking and human exploitation. We actually had her on on the show 2 weeks ago. So it's nothing but the Lord that had us connected all together. And I just want to introduce to you Antoinette Gabrielle, the Healthy Relationship Educator. Welcome to the show, Antoinette.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I was really, really, really looking forward to this show simply because I knew we were going to have some candid conversation, not only about how to make sure that there is that we have healthy relationships as survivors, but also making sure that we speak truth into the lives of those who might be suffering, because there's so many who silently suffer, silently go through because they think that they're the only ones going through this. But we want to, of course, shatter myths. We want to make sure the truth is known, and so that there can be healing, so that healthy relationship is definitely something viable for each and every survivor out here. So I truly am appreciative of you coming on and talking to us. So we're going to go ahead and get started simply because I always run out of time. Our conversations are, the information that we give is so rich and thick, and sometimes I just don't know how to just stop it. So, but anyway, I'm going to try to be good, and I say that every week as well. But let's tell me a little bit about what you do as a healthy relationship educator.
Okay. A part of my job, we go through rigorous training, and they teach us things as far as healthy relationships, what they look like, especially what an unhealthy relationship is. And we're able to go into the schools and we're able to teach the kids through different curriculums. And sometimes some of the curriculums have things in there like, is jealousy good? Because we have a lot of students who feel like if my boyfriend is jealous, he'll yell at me, he'll constantly check my phone, that means he loves me. And we try to, you know, change that mindset. A lot of young people kind of feel like if I'm rude and if I'm violent, that means that I love this guy or I love this girl. And because you see that so much on TV, because you see so many people in relationships that have two and three partners, you know, because you see on TV that promiscuity is something that's popular, we go in and we try to change that mindset and give them something else to look forward to, I should say. And we teach them about marriages, because what we've seen is we have a lot of students who've been to several funerals, but not a lot of students who've been to weddings. And when I saw them, it was amazing. You know, they understand about that ceremony, but when it comes to weddings, they're not familiar with healthy marriages. They're not familiar with parents who stay around or parents who stay in the house and parents who actually raise siblings together. They're not familiar with that at all. So we go in there and we try to enlighten them and open their eyes to see that there are some healthy marriages and relationships and even keys in how to get that and how to walk in it and operate in it.
Wow. And isn't it so provocative to think that our children are basically imitating our life? And so you have these kids who are imitating dysfunction, because so many of us, I believe, come from dysfunction. If you really look at how many people are kids are molested, abused, and, you know, there's so many areas of child abuse, but I believe that the conservative amount is like 700,000 children a year are abused. And so if you think that 700,000 people are becoming emerging adults, and most of them have not gotten the proper healing, all they do is continue to perpetuate that dysfunction. And you see it in the youth, as you said, because that's what they're emulating. And and I believe it's because either they themselves are being molested or their parents have been molested. I mean, it's just statistically known that that's how many, you know, if you're in a room with five girls or five women, you know that four of them have been abused, you know, because it's one in four. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that you are also a survivor of trauma. Do you think you could share your story with us?
I am, and I would be glad to.
Thank you.
So for me, it actually started when I was five. I was
wow.
in the neighborhood. It was the summertime, and I was outside playing. And the guy was familiar. He lived on the same block, just on the corner. I was on one end, and he was on the other end. And he came, and I was just outside riding my bike up and down the block as I normally, you know, 5 year old would. You know, my grandmother was in the
mm-hmm.
house, so I wasn't too far from the house. And he came down, and he told me that he had a dollhouse for me. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you have a dollhouse for me. So he said, hey, follow me. And we went, let's see, I can actually see it in my mind, I can count. We went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 houses down, and we made a
mm-hmm.
left into a vacant lot. And through this vacant lot on the other side, there was a house. I believe that it was initially supposed to be a garage, but someone made it into a, you know, a house, and they were probably renting
mm-hmm.
out. But at the time that we were in there, it was vacant. So he led me into this house, and he told me the dollhouse was in the house. So I go upstairs, and, you know, as a child, I'm not used to that smell. The house smelled like urine. There were alcohol bottles all over. It had that stale
wow.
smell of someone who didn't live there, but possibly people that would come in and out and sleep in there. So I'm walking up the stairs, and I'm smelling this. And I'm like, wow, what is this? And I go into a room, and there is a dollhouse in this room, but there's nothing else
mm-hmm.
in the house. Absolutely not.
Oh, my gosh.
And the dollhouse is in this room. And as I walk towards the dollhouse, I turn around, and I'm looking at him, and he's unbuckling his pants. So this is the first time
oh
that I've
gosh.
Seen something like this. And let's see, when I was five, that was 31 years ago. You know, 16-year-olds are huge. They almost look like adults.
Yes,
you know, now
yes.
some of our youth, they're kind of smaller, but back in the day, maybe 30 years ago, you know, in the 80s, you actually looked like an adult when you were about 16, 17 years old. So he was a fairly
mm-hmm.
large guy. He was about 5'9", and he's pretty stocky. And, of course, I was 5. I was little. So I turned around, and I saw him, and he was unbuckling his pants. And he began to tell me in order to receive this dollhouse that I needed to do certain favors for him, but he took it slow. So he unbuckled his pants, and we didn't engage at the moment. You know, he kind of sat me down, and we talked a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and I sat on his lap, you know, kind of easing me into it. And
mm-hmm.
then, you know, then there was oral pleasure from him, oral sex. So
mm-hmm.
When we were done, I heard the door open, and there were other people coming in the house. And
oh
as
gosh.
Other people began to come in the house, you know, they said, let us get a turn, too. I specifically
oh
remember about 3 or 4 guys coming in, and I'm already traumatized. I have no idea what I just did. I know it was uncomfortable. I know I didn't like it, and I was in tears. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, so they're coming in the house, and you know, he as he's buckling up his pants, he tells him, no, go get your own. Go get your own little girl. And because
oh
he was bigger than the rest of them, they kind of listened, and they laughed, and
mm-hmm.
they joked, and I was like, oh, man, you know, you just da-da-da-da. And, you know, he walked me out of the house, and I walked back down 4 doors to my house in tears, and I tried to be the 5-year-old that I was known to be,
mm-hmm.
but I couldn't be. I didn't know how to be. I just cried and cried and cried. And I don't remember how my mother found out. I don't remember how the police were involved. All I remember is there was a period of time that I remember crying, and then the next moment
mm-hmm.
I remember was being at the hospital. So there was like a
wow.
total blackout for hours,
mm-hmm.
maybe about 4 or 5 hours. And then
wow.
actually from that point on, it kind of went on into other family members for a period of
wow.
time after that.
Mm-hmm. And so you were molested by more than one person. It just said it was initiated by when you were 5 years old by this stranger.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that was very intense. And I know it was scary for you as a child that this was happening. And I mean, I could just see this dollhouse in this empty room and thinking, oh, my gosh, how, you know, it's how easy it is for predators, because they know that the hearts are so innocent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be ice cream, candy, or a dollhouse, I mean, we're kids when these things are happening to us. And so I really affirm your courage to keep it together, you know, while you're in that situation. And I'm so thankful that, you know, you said that police got involved and stuff like that, that people got involved. So mm-hmm. I just affirm your courage. I truly do. I have to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk more about the issues of sex. Everybody, please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A better network, as explained by an abnormally large basketball hoop. When a wireless network has bigger capacity, more data gets through more quickly. Score. Better matters. Verizon.
You use Tide Pods?
Yeah.
But I thought you were the queen of the pre-treat soak.
Those are fond memories, but those things are amazing. Once I saw what they did, I actually started to relax. Don't touch my things. Those little guys clean, brighten, and fight stains. So now I can focus on more pressing matters.
Like your container.
Isn't it beautiful?
Your sweet peppers aren't next to your hot peppers.
That's my Tide. What's yours?
Welcome back to I Reign Blog Talk Radio Show with your host, Minister Annie Bell.
Welcome back. You have tuned in to I Reign Blog Talk Radio Show, and I am your host, Minister Annie Bell. Before our first break, we were talking about Antoinette Gabrielle, who is our guest for this evening, and how she experienced her trauma, and also about how she had to, you know, get herself together and shortly after. And so, but I do want to make a quick announcement before we go on and speak. Our More Than a Conqueror Survivors support group is officially full. Sorry, everyone who didn't, I guess, respond to us quick enough to get into the group, but please continue to sign up, because we are still gathering other survivors to put together another group in the next few months. Again, we have the healthy relationship educator, Antoinette Gabrielle. Welcome back to the show, Antoinette. Thank you for sticking in there and sharing your story with us. Now, you know, we want to move in, and both of us are survivors, and so I know our stories kind of is probably similar to many of those who are out there. And some of the things that I wanted to talk about is, what are the different ways that sexual trauma impacts individuals?
Well, it's kind of a loaded question, because mm-hmm. as individuals, it will affect you differently. And the thing about it is, what I realized over the years, one of the things about us being triune beings, you know, spirit, soul, and body, spirits are released as you come together. And mm-hmm. if a person is dealing with a spirit of lust, dealing with perversion, dealing with lying, you transfer these different spirits every time you are with an individual. What I've experienced dealing with sexual trauma is that sometimes you will attract certain spirits.
And, yes.
It's interesting to see the different relationships that people find themselves in who've undergone sexual abuse. It seems to be like a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Promiscuity is very high. You have fear. You deal with a lot of fear. You deal with rejection. You deal with some may deal with identity crisis. They're not quite sure who they are and who they should be with, who were they created to be with. So it kind of impacts people differently. You open the door for different spirits. You know, some people deal with masturbation. Like I said, they deal with the spirit of perversion. Some people, and it's interesting because this is not talked about a lot, but if you have not dealt with that spirit and you're married, you're just transferring it back and forth. You're not delivered because you're married, but you may transfer that back and forth now that you are married. And that's something that a lot of people don't realize, you know.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I haven't thought about that. You're right. And that's why it is so important, again, to heal and to, you know, because we're both Christians, a lot of things we could actually take it to the Lord and for Him to perfect and to correct. And so, but a lot of people don't believe in that. Now, there's also the multi-victimization that occurs, and it's that attraction of spirits as well as the vulnerability. Because a lot of times, once we have been abused, molested, or whatever the trauma is, there is a part of us that feels helpless and hopeless, and so we carry ourselves a certain way. And then when another situation where, let's say that certain spirit has attracted itself to that spirit that was transferred to us, when the next assault begins to occur, we feel so helpless that we allow, sometimes we'll kind of just give up and say, this is probably what just going to happen to me. And so that multi-victimization syndrome almost sits in us. And so we have to be careful to break that cycle. So I think that was a great thing that you had brought up about that. And one thing, my husband and I both have been molested when we were kids. And so when we got married, we talked about it. You know, I said, hey, I was molested as a kid. And he said, oh, yeah, me too. And, you know, before we got married, we made sure we broke soul ties. We spoke against any of the witchcraft and everything. I mean, we just said the buck stops here, that we are the last generation stemming from us that's going to be abused. And so we made a pact that we're not going to allow our children to, we're going to do the best we can to make sure that we don't allow our children to go through the same trauma that we did. Now, how does that impact then? Okay, we talked about how it affects individuals. How does it impact the marriage or relationships, whether it's a boyfriend, girlfriend?
Well, like I mentioned before, there's a transference, I believe. You know, I believe communication is key, and I'm so glad that you spoke about that, because you were able to go in and say, hey, this is not happening. We're closing the door. We're not going to allow this generational curse to go on to our children. We're not going to transfer these spirits. So it's so important for communication. But without communication, you just kind of perpetuate that. And that happens in marriages. I've seen, I'm not currently married, will be. I'm not currently married. And in other relationships and marriages that I've heard of, there are a lot of couples who do not talk about that. And one of the spouses can't understand why this woman is so withdrawn, why she is not willing to have sex, why she doesn't want to be touched, or even why her husband is struggling with pornography, or why he has a problem with masturbation, or whether it's, you know, promiscuity. He can't seem to be with one person. He's in the strip club. So there's a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of open doors that kind of happen and that will affect relationships that you don't see. You may really want to be faithful, but if you haven't had that with that spirit, you feel more driven than led. You know, you feel driven this particular person or this situation. You're not being led by God, you know, but you're driven. You feel forced into these things, and you may really love that person, but for whatever reason, you feel out of control. So that's a very big impact when it comes to marriages and relationships.
And that's so true. And I was reading some research that has been done on survivors of sexual abuse, and they were saying that some, not all, but some, the survivor, the body no longer makes, and I call them happy juices. It doesn't make the oxytocin and the dopamine and the serotonin that brings the excitement and the pleasure of having sex. And so, but they were saying contrarily that it actually, in some population, it creates stress hormones. So stress hormones are produced when a person, a survivor, is about to engage in sexual activity, even though they are condoning it, even though that they may want to, you know, have sex with their husband or their boyfriend, girlfriend or wife, but because of the trauma that occurred as a child, when it comes to the sex, it sees it, the brain sees it as trauma, as a crisis, and so instead of producing the happy juices, it produces the stress chemicals. And so have you heard of that research?
Actually, I have. Yes, I have.
And I think that's very important for people to know that, because if you are in that population where thinking about having sex with your husband or wife starts to, you know, drain you, like, oh my gosh, is it time for sex again? it's because of that, you know. And the other thing I think that happens, especially women, is that when you have kids, then you got the hormonal changes, and then you're getting old and you're tired, you're getting older and you're getting tired, that plays a role as well, on top of the fact that you may be that population that your body creates the stress hormones instead. Now, I think that you had also mentioned before about the oxytocin that doesn't get made for some survivors of child abuse. Have you heard of that as well?
Yeah. One of my professors, she's a neuroscientist, and we were talking, and she was talking about, she's actually studied oxytocin. This was maybe a dissertation that she did. You know, this was her thing. And she began to tell us that there are some people who've undergone sexual abuse and trauma who no longer produce it at the levels that it's needed. Oxytocin being what we would call like the binding hormone, or that hormone that is released through breastfeeding and childbirth that binds you to that child. When it comes to relationships, you're no longer producing that neurotransmitter. You're not producing it at levels that will cause you to want to bind to your spouse or to your partner or to that loved one. So it's almost like we see it all the time. People who can easily have sex and walk away. There's no physical attraction. There's no commitment to it. It was just an act. So I think we see that a lot. I mean, we may not have been able to put a name to it or know what was coming, what was happening chemically, but research has shown that in some populations and with some people, that is definitely the case.
Wow. And so, which also then, like you said, they do the bang bang and then they just get up and leave. There's no cuddle, because that's that where the cuddle hormone comes in. And so some people can just get it done, have their orgasm and get up. And I know that like the prolactin is produced to that once you have the orgasm, that the prolactin is produced so that you won't keep thinking about sex. So it's natural to, after having an orgasm, to go ahead and, you know, start thinking about, oh, I got to do dishes, and I got to, oh, got to, don't forget to pay the bills. And so that's normal, but there should be some of that a moment where there is that cuddle time and, you know, just wallowing, if you want to call it, wallowing in, you know, that time after the lovemaking. But when that oxytocin is not being created, then it definitely, you can definitely see why there is that, you know, that blank stare afterwards. And I think it's also, you know, like you said, it is created even in the woman's breast milk to help create that bonding between baby and mother. That oxytocin is very important. And so, you know, you tend to wonder if it's not being created. I mean, you know, is it being created in the survivor who's a female when she is breastfeeding, that's something definitely to, you know, to look into, because then you can see why some women who are survivors, they don't have that connection with their child. Some of them, not all of them. And so whereas even the child feel like, I've never felt close to my mom, and I'm thinking it was all emotional, but it looks like there's some physiological and some chemical things that are occurring in our bodies.
You know, gosh, what? That would explain a lot.
Yes, it would. You know, we got to put it out there for someone to research, because I'm not in that scientific arena. I just like to read about it. So we gotta put it out there for someone to go ahead and do some research on it, and you know, and see what that, if there's a definitely a connection. Now look, I gotta take another quick break. So everybody, please hang in tight. We're gonna come back and talk about some more stuff. Hold on just a second.
Hi, I'm Curtis Stone, and this is Bilo's Cooking with Curtis for under $10. This month, I've chosen tomatoes from Bilo's fantastic fresh produce. So come on, click here and let's eat well for less.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Irene Blog Talk Radio Show. I am Minister Annie Bell, and we are talking today about sex. We're just having some candid conversation about sex after sexual trauma. A quick reminder, after every show, we have a prayer line open for everyone who is listening, because we know that sometimes talking about these things could trigger a bad thought, a bad memory. It could open up some wounds that haven't healed properly. So we want to help you to pray with you. We want to those who don't know Christ and want to learn about Christ, we got intercessors on standby at 9:30 this evening. Just call us at 530-881-1212. The access code is 225-184-078. Now, if you missed that, just keep your eyes on the screen. You'll see our number scroll across there for those who want to join us again this evening at 9:30 Eastern. We want you to know that you are not alone in this battle. So we were just talking to Antoinette Gabrielle, who is a healthy relationship educator. And we were just talking about all of the different chemicals that our brain produces during the time that when we were preparing to have sexual intercourse or intimate time with the one we love, care about, or whoever. And so we, you know, talking about, hey, some of this stuff is not being produced. Scientifically is shown that this is, some of the things are not being produced, and that is why it causes some to either to even not want or desire to have sex. Not just the memory alone or the trauma of it or the, you know, the degradation of it, but that physiologically our body is not producing what is needed. So thank you again, Antoinette Gabrielle, for staying with us and coming back and to talk about a little bit more. I have a couple other questions, because
sure.
If this is happening, obviously it's impacting the marriage, you know, or relationship. Mm-hmm. It could be mm-hmm. frustrating to some people. And so what are some of the things that we can do to ensure that we maintain healthy relationships?
Okay, one of the things that I say foundational, which is key, is communicate.
Yes.
A lot of times we kind of think that communication may not be needed, you'll figure it out. But out of 100%, we'll say 55% is body language. So you're communicating mm-hmm. even when you're not saying anything. And 38% is how you say it. It's your tone. It's your pitch. And then the lasting 7% is basically just vocal. So communication is key when it comes to being able to articulate how you feel, what's going on. Because even though you may be married, even though years have gone past, the enemy would like to come back and play games with your mind. Mm-hmm. He'd mm-hmm. like to come back and give you dreams or thoughts, or someone walk past you that may trigger something. So I think communication is key when it's dealing mm-hmm. with things like this, because you know what? If you keep it silent, the enemy will keep messing with you with it. You got to open
That's
your
right.
mouth. Life and death is in the power of the tongue. You know, we overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony. So we have to speak and we have to be able to say things. So with your partner, your best friend, you have to be able to communicate and let them know what the enemy's trying to do and what's going on, and not allow shame to get in the way.
Yes. That's very good practical things that you have, you know, stated. I like the communication a lot, because
mm-hmm.
our spouses cannot see or read our minds as much as you mm-hmm. want them to. They can't. I recall an occasion where my abuser would in the room with other people, it would actually wait until, because he was a family member, wait until mm-hmm. there was a moment where everybody might have been, had their attention on the TV or something like that, and he'll, you know, reach over and grab my breast, or reach over and tap me on my butt. And mm-hmm. I just absolutely abhor that. And so my husband, because, you know, we're married, and that's part of mm-hmm. being, you know, frisky with one another and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. And so he decided one day to pat me on my butt, and I went off. You know, there were many occasions I've gone off on my husband because of my PTSD. Uh-huh. And I was like, that's not cute. You know, this is my butt, you know. and he's looking at me terrified, like, okay, what just happened? I'm just showing affection, you know. Same uh-huh. thing when he, you know, was peeping in while I was showering one day. And it provoked a memory of when my abuser would make me go take a shower and watch me as I showered. You know, he got off on that as well. So that wasn't cute. So I'm, you know, screaming at the top of my lungs, you know, because, again, that trauma. And so finally I had to just, you know, first of all, I didn't know why I was doing that, you know, and I mm-hmm. had to kind of think back and say, what's wrong with me? Why did I not find that cute? And so after I figured it out, I had to say, you know, hey, this is why I think I reacted the way I did in these separate occasions. And so, you know, maybe before you do, you know, instead of patting me on my butt, maybe you can come and, you know, hug me. And, you know, then let your hand slide down or something like that, because I have to engage, you know,
it.
Have eye contact. Yeah, first I need to make sure that, hey, it's not a predator trying to, you know, do that. And so I think that is great. And another thing that I think is important is that when, during lovemaking, I think it's important to open your eyes and see who you're making love to, because again, when those who have been traumatized, sometimes when we close our eyes, our mind takes us to that traumatic event and we see our abuser. And so,
That's good.
Open your eyes, connect with that man, that woman, and, you know, talk to them and have them talk to you so that you can stay present in that time instead of allowing your mind to escape you and go back to that traumatic moment. What you think that's good?
Yeah, that's real good. That is good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I can recall good times, you know, years ago when I would have sex and I would have flashbacks.
Yes.
And, yeah, and it wasn't even the person, you know. And you kind of tense up, and then all of a sudden you're no longer involved, and the person can't really understand what happened. Now you've disconnected, and yeah, so I think that is so, that's good. It is.
Yeah.
Know who you're with, and especially when it's your spouse, you understand that it's not a contract, it's a covenant, and this person loves you. This
that's
person
right.
is completely on one accord with you, wants the best for you, does not want to hurt you or harm
yes.
you. So, yeah, I think that is so good.
Oh, I love that. I love how you said it's not a contract. It's a covenant and a commitment. For those who are married and, you know, we're not saying, hey, you got to get married, but we are, you know, for those who are in Christ, we are big proponents of marriage before sex anyway. But that covenant, you know, to let you know that this person should have the best in mind for me and cares about me and loves me deeply, you know, that's all very important. And if you're dating and you tell your mate that, hey, that kind of stuff makes me uncomfortable and this is why, but they don't respect it, I would say you might want to reconsider that relationship. Do a little bit more communicating, go to some classes, and make sure that you're going to, you know, make vows to the right person, because it takes a strong person to be married to a survivor. I'm not kidding you. It takes a very strong, grounded in Christ, flat foot loving you kind of person to be able to be married to a survivor, because my husband goes through a lot with me. I'm going to be honest with you. You know, I could tell you just probably the other day we had an argument because I didn't like his tone, because it reminded me of the things my abuser would say to me to keep me under control. And, you know, first I talked to him, you know, calmly, but I started getting high pitched and, you know, and just shouting, because I was like, hey, don't you understand what I'm trying to say? So please make sure that you are getting yourself, first giving yourself some time to heal, know Christ if you don't know him, and then try to get involved with someone, because this thing right here, survivors, this CPTSD is no joke, you know, and we need to get a handle on it. My other question is to you, and you see how I run out of time because I just keep on yapping, but what
this is a good dialogue.
I know, very good dialogue. Spouses, okay, the other spouse, the spouse that is not a survivor but married to one, what are some of the things that could, you keep them encouraged in the relationship so that they the relationship stays healthy? What can the spouses do? What can be, you know, what can we, tools can we give to them?
Well, I think it's important to, one, be understanding and loving. Like you said, it takes a lot to be with a person who's undergone such trauma, because you have to understand and have to be selfless to understand that sometimes when the person goes off or when they're angry or when certain things happen, it's not you. And that takes some practice to understand that it's not personal. And it really takes God. I can't leave him out of this at all. It takes God and it takes prayer. But also to educate yourself. You know, there's Google. You know, there's books. You know, there's so much out there, so much information out there, that if you don't understand what's going on, there are help groups. You know, there are things you may have some avenues at your church. There may be counseling that you guys can go to or you can go to separately just to be educated, to understand what's going on. And I think that really helps. And it also shows your spouse who has undergone this type of trauma that you're there, you're willing, and you're trying, you know. It's not always easy.
Yes.
But sometimes just to know that someone's trying and they're willing, to see that person willing to go through these things, and they may not go through it perfectly. I'm sure they won't, because none of us are perfect. But just them being there means so much.
Yes, yes. And, you know, to know the depth of the survivor's love for the spouse, because I read something the other day where it said, if you have gone through something, if you have gone through trauma and you still have the courage to love someone and care for someone, that is deep. And that's true, because we are hurting. Survivors, even those who have healed, we will never truly be back to that child, you know, who was never touched, you know, because from the moment that we are touched, abused, or the moment the trauma enters our lives, our growth, our development takes a detour. So for us to have the courage to continue to love and to be compassionate, that is deep. And so I think that's good. One other thing I wanted to add is to spouses, something that you should never say to a survivor, spouse or not, is get over it. When are you just going to get over it? It happened. It's water under the bridge. Nothing like that, because, again, the reason why it's called PTSD is because it's almost like it's present with us every day, you know. And so for you to say to just get over it, it would be, it's almost like re-traumatizing that person. So I do want to tell you, to those spouses who are out there, stay compassionate and never say get over it. Or anything like that, and that'll help your relationship a lot too. I know we probably already talked about this, but to stay sexually healthy for the survivor to stay sexually healthy, what are some tips that you might have for them, for us?
Well, you bring balance because you're married and I'm not. So from a single standpoint, I think having accountability is important, and being able to be open and honest with someone about what's going on, because sometimes people can see some things that you can't see. They can see some behaviors that you don't even understand and know that you're operating in. So you have to have someone in your corner who can be honest with you, someone that you can be vulnerable with, someone that you can trust, and someone whom you'll actually value what they're saying. I think that's very important. As you say, you know, it's a lifelong process.
Yes.
It's almost like being in a car accident. You know, you survived the accident, but now you're dealing with the trauma behind it. You might have been in a car accident on the expressway while it's raining. You survived it, but when it rains, it brings back some type of memory, or you're afraid to drive, or things like that. So with this instance, you know, there are going to be certain triggers, and also the enemy likes to play games. So it's important to be able to have someone that you can be candid with and you can pray with, someone who you don't feel judged by, I think that is very important, you know, to just to stay healthy and to continue to just go before God. You know, I believe that God brings certain things to your remembrance, and I believe that he brings things to your forefront for you to deal with. Thank God he doesn't bring it all at the same time, because we crumble and we'd be crushed.
Yes,
but there are times that God wants to deal with us concerning certain things, and it's just to be willing and to yield when he wants to deal with these things.
Amen. I think that was really good and very, again, very profound, because it's really about making sure that we're centered, and that, again, the healing process is definitely continuing and ongoing. You, as I read your bio, you do a lot of things right now. You're so busy. Tell us some of the things you're doing in the community right now, and then what some of your future endeavors are.
Well, actually, with my job, we go into different high schools. So we work with Rockdale, Newton, Fulton, and also Gwinnett County High Schools.
Wow.
And we do,
and that's in Georgia.
Yes, that is in Georgia. Uh-huh. And we go in and we educate, and we're also in some of the middle schools. I want to say about 3 or 4 of the middle schools. So we're going in and we're educating on that level. And also, as I stated, I work with Sharon J. Brown, and we're going to be doing some traveling and some tours over the next few months dealing with sex trafficking and also sexual abuse and different things. I was actually at a gang summit earlier in February, and
yes.
I wanted the people to understand that the behavior that you see now with the gang violence, with the murders, with the drugs, and with these angry teens, the things that you're seeing now at 16 and 17 years old, that's not where it started. Although you may start to see it at 16 and 17 years old.
That's right.
That seed was planted before. So I needed them to understand that sometimes you need to get to the root of the issue. Don't just cut off the branch. Get to the root of the issue. Find out what's going on. What's going on in these homes? What's going on with these kids, with these emotions? Why are they so angry? Why are they so withdrawn? Why do they feel the need to feel accepted? And, you know, so those were some of the things that we do and some of the things that I've been doing in the community, just to kind of put it out there, you know, not just to deal with the violence, but let's deal with the person. Let's deal with the heart of the matter. And then the violence
That's
and
right.
all the other issues will change.
That's a byproduct, exactly. So I'm glad that you are advocating for that, because we can't just keep throwing our babies in jail. There's something going on, you know, and especially for the Black youth population, because they get judged harder, harsher penalties.
Uh-huh.
Please don't get me on that soapbox, but definitely we have to, you know. What you're doing is so very important, because you're going in and you're actually, you know, being able to see our youth and try to help to intervene at a, you know, at that level. So what are some of your future endeavors for yourself personally?
Well, I would really like to kind of just take time to allow God to open doors. This
yes.
has definitely been a process for me, and he's been educating me, and I can see how my traumatic experiences and my journey through life is a blessing and also a key to open doors to other people for their freedom. So I'm just at this moment just allowing God to open doors in this arena for me to be a voice to those who seem like they have lost their voice, you know?
Yes. Amen. That is so wonderful. And so so that people can get in touch with you and those doors can definitely be open, how can our listeners find you?
I'm on Facebook. It would be Antoinette Gabriel, Antoinette, Gabriel, Gabriel. You can also email me at agabriel.chi@gmail.com. You can also leave messages. Leave a message on my Facebook account, because I would love to be able to help anyone who may listen to this broadcast or just in general who feels as if they have some things that they need to share, or there's some things going on. Because for myself, there were many years that things were going on that I couldn't understand. I couldn't put a voice to dreams that were feelings, that were thoughts, and I just didn't understand. And there was no one to talk to and no one talking about it. So I would love to be that voice and that helping hand to whomever that may need that.
Amen. You know, I have absolutely had a wonderful time on this show because, one, there's not too many people who could, you know, who could truly understand not only how it feels to be a survivor, but to be able to candidly speak about our personal, you know, experiences and then turn around and back it up with science. I think that was wonderful. So thank you so much for all the work that you do. You and Sharon Brown out there in the trenches. Please keep me abreast of all of your conferences and stuff, because I would love to support you as well.
Yes.
And, again, I just want to say thank you so much for your time and coming out here.
It's been a blessing. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, everybody, you know, I got to leave you with the wisdom to reign. And I just wanted to – I found this cute thing on the Internet, and it's called – Bill of Sexual Rights, and there's 16 of them. I'll go ahead and read them, and you could actually find it on the University of Alberta Sexual Assault Center. And so, number one, I have a right to develop healthy attitudes about sex. Two, I have a right to receive accurate sexual information. Number three, I have a right to sexual privacy. Number four, I have a right to protection from bodily invasion or harm. Five, I have a right to my own feelings, beliefs, opinions, and perceptions about sex. Six, I have a right to set my own sexual limits. Seven, I have the right to say no to sexual behavior. Eight, I have the right to experience sexual pleasure. Nine, I have the right to be in control of my sexual experience. 10, I have the right to control touch and sexual contact. 11, I have the right to stop sexual arousal that feels inappropriate or uncomfortable. 12, I have the right to develop my sexuality according to my sexual preferences and orientation. 13, I have the right to have a loving partner. 14, I have a right to have a partner who respects me, understands me, and is willing to communicate with me about sex. 15, I have the right to talk to my partner about my sexual assault and or abuse. And 16, I have the right to enjoy healthy sexual pleasure and satisfaction. You have that right, and as part of the wisdom to reign, you have to know your rights, just like we know our rights as a citizen here in the United States. So to make a donation or get in touch with me or my team, please go to www.wealthmngt.org or follow us at Facebook and Twitter at IREIGN, Stop Abuse and Fight Back. Now, repeat after me, everybody. I reclaim my life. I excel at living. I illuminate the dark. I grow in Christ, and I nurture myself and others. Let's reign together with Christ. See you next Thursday, everybody, at 8 p.m. All right. Bye-bye.